his dark features more than usually intense.
"My lord, you have done us proud today with feasting and gifts, with music and good hospitality. Indeed, you have at all times been the most noble and generous of patrons, the most loyal of kinsmen, and I hope I have not stinted in expressing my gratitude."
Magnus inclined his head, waiting for more.
"My lord," Ulf said, "I wish to ask a favor. I wish to present to you a proposal, a bold plan that has been much in my thoughts."
"Go on."
"I've spoken before of a far-off land, the land of my father's dreams. Those isles in the western sea are a place of sheltered waterways, of gentle hills and verdant pastures. There, countless birds wheel and dive across the open sky. There, the ocean teems with fish, and the great rocks guard shores alive with seals. So travelers tell. It is a land of myriad shades of blue, a realm whose shifting light dazzles the eyes with its loveliness. That place is far beyond the farthest reach of our ships. It is days sailing across open waters, going as the whale does, by stars and skerries, by currents and tides. I have long wished to journey to that place, which some call Orkneyjar, Isles of the Seal. I would go there with men and women of like mind and build a new home in those islands, a place where peace and amity would rule and folk might live in harmony. I have been sickened by the disputes that poisoned my father's last years and left him unable to trust those who had been friend, neighbor, or ally. I would make a new community, away from warfare and hatred."
"A noble goal, if somewhat unrealistic," Magnus observed. "If these isles are as fair as you paint them, might not others have settled there before you? You might find these shores and be slaughtered by naked savages the instant your foot touched land."
Ulf's voice was calm.
"I will go in a spirit of friendship, though I plan to take warriors with me. This is no foolish, ill-considered mission, my lord. We must have the capacity to protect our women and children at least. Still, I would try to avoid conflict. If folk dwell there, they may be persuaded to a common goal. They might be glad of new skills and new blood."
Magnus raised his brows.
"You astonish me, kinsman. What is it you believe I can contribute to such a venture?"
"I need your blessing and your support," Ulf said. "This winter I will build a ship, a finer, stronger ship than any seen before in all of Norway. The ship will carry me, with my wife and all those bold enough to join me, across the ocean to the new land. My lord, I would carry out this task of shipbuilding in the safety of your anchorage here at Freyrsfjord, if you permit. And I would ask that you release those of your household who wish to accompany me, the Wolfskins, Erik Halvardsson and Håkon Håkbeak, who may return in the autumn, and others who will stay and help me build my new settlement."
Magnus regarded him gravely.
"Well, well," he said,
and there was no telling what he thought.
"An interesting tale, and not altogether unexpected, kinsman. Still, men and women cannot live on lights and colors. You'll need stock, tools, seed, and thralls. How would you make such a difficult journey with these things?"
"I hope to acquire a sturdy knarr, my lord. For it's true, a longship is not well suited to bear such a cargo. I will purchase a vessel and strengthen her for the journey."
"It seems a wild venture to me, and ill-advised."
Thorvald Strongarm, returned for his daughter's wedding, had a ferocious frown on his brow. Ulf's mouth tightened.
"My husband is not the sort of man much given to wildness."
Margaret's clear voice cut across the hall. Brows were lifted in surprise that she should venture to contribute to such a debate.
"I am certain he has planned this with much care, and allowed for all eventualities. Let us hear him out."
The Jarl gave a nod in her direction.
"You speak well, my dear. Your support of your husband bodes favorably for his success. But tell me, do you not view such a venture with some misgivings? It is a long way from home and from your family, after all. An island far out in an open sea, and the need to start all over again from nothing. Most young women, but newly wed, would fear such a great change.
Margaret looked him straight in the eye. In such a place, great things may be achieved, my lord, she said. I would be a poor wife indeed if I could not share my husband's vision. A flush rose to Ulf's cheeks.
Thank you, he said, glancing at Margaret.
For a moment the intensity of his expression softened a little. It was plain he had not expected her to speak out so boldly on his behalf. He turned back to the Jarl.
I will answer my lord's concerns and yours, father-in-law. My intention is a journey there in spring. I will take with me men and women, stock and tools, all that is needed to establish ourselves. Craftsmen, law-speakers, farmers, and fishermen. It will be a new community in a new land. There is a bright future for us on that shore.
I see.
Magnus's eyes were very shrewd.
This is where your account was leading, that is clear. You wish to pick the eyes out of my household, and use my facilities, and sail away, never to be seen again. Tell me, what rewards could such a venture possibly hold for me as your patron? Ah, I was coming to that.
Ulf leaned forward, his hands flat on the table.
It is true, I would take men from your lordship's household, and some will choose to settle in the islands. But I can offer you something of great value in return. I will leave my shipwrights, my fitters, my sailmakers behind when I go. They are expert, my lord, the finest in all Norway. Each vessel they build is better than the last, sleeker, swifter, stronger. That knowledge will be yours to do with what you will. And our settlement will be yours to visit, and to use as safe anchorage for any longships you may choose to build. From such a vantage point, a force of warriors might journey with speed and ease to shores they say are rich with plunder, southward to the lands of the Saxon, southwest to isles dotted with Christian temples, whose altars groan with fine silver and jeweled reliquaries. To put it simply, my lord, I'm presenting you with a great opportunity, if you are bold enough to see it. This would give you a unique strategic advantage. If I might speak, my lord.
Eirik rose to his feet, golden hair glinting in the lamplight, wolfskin proud on his broad shoulders.
There are those of us who have known of this plan since early days. Your kinsman here is a fine leader, and his vision both noble and stirring. There are many good men who will want to be part of it, more than he can take, in truth. Supporting this venture would bring you great honour, not to speak of a very handy base in the west.
Magnus was thinking hard.
And how do you plan to pay for all this? Demanded Thorvald Strongarm, scowling at Ulf. A knarr, a fine longship to be constructed at considerable speed, best breeding stock, the services of expert men. Did you find a hoard of troll silver when you journeyed north?
Ulf looked at him.
I can pay, he said quietly. I have made my decision, and I will leave these shores with or without Jarl Magnus's blessing. My father is dead. To journey to these isles was his dream, his obsession. On his death, my father's lands became mine, and I have sold them. I will not return there. It has been a place of much unrest, of strife and sorrow. Now it belongs to another man, and so I can pay.
After that, nobody said anything for a while. Eivind glanced across to the place where Somerled sat, but Somerled was no longer there. Turning back, he caught Margaret's eye. She looked over to the doorway, back at Eivind, moved her head a little. The message was clear enough. You'd best go after him, since I cannot. Eivind excused himself politely and made his way out. Clouds veiled the moon, the yard was in darkness. A dog sniffed around the doorway, lured by the smell of roast meat. A stone flew through the air, hitting it squarely on the rump. The dog squealed and bolted. Following the stone's flight back, and hoping the next target would not be himself, Eivind made his way to the steps that led up to the grain store. Sommerled stood there in the dark, hurling stones at the ground now, hard enough to make them bounce. He did not stop as Eivind approached.
Sommerled, go away.
He'd heard that tone before, long ago, and had learned a lesson, not to ask what was wrong. Instead, he seated himself on the steps, saying nothing at all, and after a while Sommerled ran out of stones and sat down beside him.
So, said Sommerled after a considerable silence, what do you think of this fine Ulf and his grand plans to build a new home in the fair realms of light? Does it inspire you?
It seemed not unreasonable, the way he explained it, Eivind said cautiously.
A good place, with opportunities, but ever so slightly regrettable that he has sold my birthright to fund his dreams. Oh, well, never mind. My mother was no more than a concubine, and my father treated her like dirt. Why should I expect any better?
His voice was not quite steady. In the dim light from the hall doorway, Eivind could see his ashen pallor and his tight-clenched hands.
Come on now, Eivind protested. Ulf is your brother, surely. That's the trouble with you, Eivind. You don't listen. I've told you before, Ulf despises me. I'm no more than an embarrassment to him. He's never known what to do with me. Well, he solved that problem now, sold my father's lands, all of them. No thought of any share for his father's other son, and he's off over the sea, where he'll never have to be reminded again that he has a brother. Neat, tidy. Only one little loose end, really.
I don't like to hear you talk like this, Eivind said.
You must be wrong. Have you spoken to Ulf of this? He must have provided for you. As I said.
Sommerled's voice was tighter now, threatening to slip from his hard-won control.
You judge all men by your own measure. Very unwise, Eivind. It'll cause you grave trouble some day.
Eivind drew a deep breath.
Sommerled, he ventured.
What?
The word was like a whip crack.
Are you sure you're not jumping to conclusions because you are angry with Ulf? I thought perhaps, well, with the wedding, you know, thinking doesn't suit you, Eivind. You've never had a talent for it. What can you mean? You believe I am jealous?
At least Sommerled was talking, though keeping up the conversation was a little like making one's way across hot coals. It was ever thus when Sommerled was upset. His way of dealing with hurts was to lash out, to use his tongue as his weapon, to be his friend, close by in times of trouble, was to invite wounds. Helping Sommerled was a special kind of battle.
It seemed to me you had grown fond of Margaret, and that today's festivities might have upset you. Fond.
It was a good attempt at a scathing tone.
It seemed to me you might have preferred her for yourself. She likes you. You have a lot in common. I imagine that makes it hurt more. You'd better go on, since you've decided to explain me to myself. What did you think would happen, that I would step up to Margaret and suggest she choose a man who has no better inheritance than his own wits? Ulf is his father's son, the Jarl's kinsman. He's wealthy, he's building a ship. Ulf has hopes and dreams. Men speak of him with respect. Fondness is no basis for marriage, Eivind. I would think less of Margaret if she chose me, for to do so would be the act of a fool.
There was a silence. It was as if years slipped away, and they were alone in the woods again, in the immensity of the dark.
Nobody cares, Sommerled had said. Nobody cares what happens to me.
You had high and noble aspirations, Eivind said quietly. You impressed me. So strongly did you believe in yourself, a boy who would be a king. When you first said that, you shocked me. Yet you convinced me it would be so. I still see that strength, and so does Margaret, I believe. Ulf has hurt and angered you, but you still have friends, Sommerled. And you still have a path ahead of you. You are clever and able.
Sometimes it seems to me you move like moonlight, too quick and subtle to follow. You say Ulf has hopes and dreams. What about your own dreams?
For my brother, this voyage is a new beginning.
Summerled's tone was bleak.
For me, it represents something rather different. My final repudiation by my own kin. Forgive me if I find it somewhat beyond me to summon a mood of confidence in my future.
He spat on the ground at their feet.
We are too solemn, perhaps, Eivind said wearily.
Will you come to the drinking hall with me? One can at least seek the oblivion of strong ale when all else fails.
Spoken like a true wolfskin, said Summerled.
And what act of friendly generosity comes next? Do you plan to share your hall with me, so I can look for consolation between her open thighs?
It was all Eivind could do not to hit him. He sprang to his feet, unable to speak for anger, and strode off toward the settlement. A pox on Summerled. He wasn't worth the trouble.
Eivind!
He halted but did not turn.
I was joking, man. Come on, I'll drink with you.
You try me hard sometimes, Eivind growled.
I'm sorry.
Summerled scrubbed a hand across his cheek.
You do rather leave yourself open to it. Now let's find some good ale, shall we? That was the best suggestion I've heard all night.
Chapter 4 It became apparent soon enough that Summerled was at least partly right about his brother. Questioned directly as to what provision had been made for Summerled, Ulf replied curtly that an amount of silver had been set aside, sufficient to help the boy get on his feet, so to speak. Asked further, would his brother be included in the expedition, Ulf replied no. Summerled was not a creature of voyages and forays, of hardships and challenges. He had always preferred the court. He would rather make runes and poems than journey across the ocean to carve out new territory. Let him remain at court, then, and make a living as a skald or lawspeaker, since he was apt for either calling. And if he tired of Rogaland, the funds available to him would allow travel, to a limited extent. Did not the jarls and chieftains of the north welcome men of learning? Summerled would do well enough. With that, Ulf made it clear the subject was closed, and turned to what was foremost in his mind, the building of a ship. Jarl Magnus had quickly seen the wisdom in Ulf's offer of a safe harbour out to seaward, and had given his full approval for his kinsman's bold venture. Perhaps he saw no other alternative. Ulf's vision had captured the imagination of men from all parts of Rogaland, far more than the expedition could reasonably include. Magnus was heard to comment that Ulf's grasp of strategy was impressive, and his ability to make his dream a reality truly inspiring. The fleet would sail with both Magnus's personal blessing and his financial backing, as well as carrying a number of his own close retainers among its complement of fighting men. The work began. Timber came from the north, great lengths of it already well prepared, reflecting Ulf's talent for taking calculated risks. Only the oldest oaks could provide the massive pieces required for the vessel's keel and mast blocks. The wood was well seasoned and supple from storage in marsh water. In addition to these forest giants, there were many trunks of smaller size, and as soon as these were unloaded, Ulf's shipwrights began to instruct a veritable army of workers, both freemen and thralls, in the delicate use of axe and adze to shape sweetly curved strakes and strong, resilient ribs. The floorboards were fashioned from pine. These would not be nailed down, but left free to be lifted as required for baling or storage. Men wove corkings from wool and horsehair. Others worked on the oars, the pale pine wood shaped to a graceful taper, the lengths graded so they would strike the water as one, for all the curve of the ship's side. It was a full winter's work. Sails were woven in bold stripes of white and red, and a master woodcarver labored long hours over a great price of oak heart, fashioning the dragon's head that would adorn the prow. The carver's apprentices worked a fine eagle mask on the tiller. As the great task unfolded, even the most skeptical members of Jarl Magnus's court were captivated. The vessel surpassed any they had seen before. She was massive as a great whale, yet sleek as an otter. Ulf named her the Golden Dragon. There were 15 benches, a crew of 30 oarsmen would be required, and 5 or 6 more to perform the multiplicity of other tasks, bailing, handling the sails, fending off attackers. And they'd need a crew for the Gnar. Which would bear the women and children, the thralls, the stock, and the best part of the supplies. Ulf watched the longship grow, strake overlapping delicately curved strake, all ports neatly covered with little round shutters, each carven with its own small motif. For the pair of fellows who specialize in this field of work like to add their own touch. Some were runic. Such a vessel would bear acknowledgement to the gods on whom her safety in open seas must depend. But there were little creatures, too. A dog, an owl, a beaver, and 1 or 2 carvings of men and women who were, how could one put it, at play, one might say. One hoped these would not provide too much of a distraction for the oarsmen. There was work for many folk that winter, from the smiths who turned out rivets and nails, to the women who wove the spruce root lashings to fasten the hull's planking to the ribs. This ship would move under the ocean's hard caress. She would shudder and yield and remain whole under the fiercest embrace of the storm. Above the waterline, they used nails. There came a time when the Golden Dragon was close to ready. Now a team of men came with bright paints and turned the savage figurehead into a masterpiece of red and yellow, the crest and eyes picked out in gold leaf. The tiller received a similar decoration, and a handsome set of shields was prepared to match, though these would adorn the rim rails only when the ship was at rest. While she crossed open sea, they would be stored away for safety. Ulf sent a man to arrange supplies of dried fish, casks of cheese, flasks of oil, and sacks of nuts and apples. There was a constant smell of bread baking, hard bread that would store a while. Ulf sent another man to check on the stock he had brought. It was hard to believe, but spring was almost here, and soon the expedition would be ready to depart. The Knarr arrived, an ungainly blockish sort of craft, built principally for strength. She could travel long distances under sail alone, her master told Ulf as they inspected the vessel where she lay at anchor in Freyrsfjord. She required only a small crew, and this he had already, for all his men had volunteered for the voyage, provided the pay was good enough. He'd best take crew and boat together, the master advised Ulf, since the men knew the Knarr better than a husband knows a wife. Women and children? Yes, he could carry them as well, though it wouldn't be comfortable. Castle? They'd need to talk about that. Now, about the pay again. Eivind was down by the water, helping haul the new ship's mast blocks into place. The crew of the Knarr had come ashore. They would find lodgings in the settlement. Among them was a fellow who seemed somehow familiar, though Eivind could not quite place him. He was broad-cheeked and sported a beard as red as his hair. He had a hard, brooding sort of look about him. The look of a man all too ready to find new enemies. And yet Eivind's memory was of someone open-faced and friendly. He almost thought...
Sigurd!
Eivind called, sure now.
Sigurd Guthmundsson! What brings you here to the south?
The red-haired man turned slowly to look at him. There was no sign of recognition, not a flicker. Still, the more Eivind looked, the more certain he became.
"Forgotten me already?" he joked. "I'm Eivind Halvardsson, the same Eivind you grew up with. Many's the time we wrestled together or swam races across the Serpent's Neck. It's good to see you. We didn't know what had become of you after you left my mother's longhouse."
The other man looked back at him, eyes carefully blank.
"You've made a mistake," he said and turned away.
Later, Eivind asked another of the Knarr's crew who the fellow was, for he did not think he had been wrong. The crewman laughed.
"Him? Only name he goes by is Firehead, and there's more than one reason for that. You don't want to cross that fellow when he's in his cups. Why'd you ask?"
"Nothing," Eivind said. "He reminded me of someone I once knew, that's all. Someone from home."
Didn't think Firehead had a home, the man grunted. Been with us a long while, 2 or 3 years at least. Odd sort of fellow. Good worker, though. Strong.
Eivind made no further comment, though he thought he was right. Still, if Sigurd did not want to know him, that was Sigurd's business. Meanwhile, there was Somerled to worry about. Somerled was behaving oddly. He appeared to have abandoned gaming and poetry and music, and instead could be seen restlessly pacing the halls. Often he watched his brother, or his brother's wife, with a look in his eye that filled Eivind with a deep unease. Before the ship set sail, Eirik went north to Hammersby to bid his mother farewell. Thinking it was well past time for Somerled to be away from court for a little, Eivind suggested the two of them go too, and Somerled agreed in the manner of a man who cares very little about anything. The farm seemed different, smaller. His mother had white streaks in her blonde hair, and Eirik greeted the thrallwoman, Oksana, with a kiss on the lips in front of everyone, and went indoors with one tow-headed child on his shoulders and two others holding his hands, while Oksana carried the newest baby. Many things had changed. Halla was married and gone. Thorgerd was still there, quite fat now, bustling about with cooking pots and glancing at Eivind under her lashes. They did not stay long. On the last day, Eivind and Somerled went up into the woods under lowering skies, and found the treehouse they had made one summer's day long ago. It was still sturdy enough, though something had nested in one of the corners, and the ropes had begun to rot. On the bole of the great oak, the runes Somerled had carved were as clear as the day he made them.
"Two brothers made this house," said Eivind. "See, I remember. Somerled carved these runes, and here below, my own name. Eivind."
Somerled nodded.
"Would you be content?" he asked. "If this were all you left behind you for folk to remember, a few markings high on a tree, the only sign that you lived your span in the world."
Eivind stared at him, not sure he understood.
"No, of course not," he said. "I hope I will be remembered, for a little at least, as a brave man, one who served Thor and fought for the Jarl with as much courage and skill as he could. I would like to be remembered for that. What about you?"
Somerled said nothing. He stared ahead of him, his expression unreadable. Suddenly, Eivind was impatient.
"Odin's bones, Somerled," he said. "What is it you want? To please your brother? To go on this voyage with him? To forget him and go your own way? One thing is certain, you have lost the strong will you showed as a boy when we first sat here together, and you helped me make my name on the wood. I thought then you were a man who could do whatever he wanted, and you made it clear what you would be. But now you seem to me lost."
The flow of words ceased. Eivind waited for the scathing response. No doubt Somerled would tell him to stop trying to think, since he was so bad at it. But Somerled remained silent.
"Somerled," Eivind ventured after a while. "I hope I didn't offend you. I want to help if I can."
"You can't help. Nobody can. Shall I explain it to you? Ulf doesn't want me to go. He wishes to be rid of me, and he's right. I dislike voyages of discovery. I don't enjoy getting cold and wet. The idea of living in some outpost surrounded by savages doesn't appeal at all. But my brother's voyage was purchased with what was mine. I should go. He owes it to me to let me go."
"I doubt he's even aware you want to," Eivind said carefully.
"Have you asked him?" "I don't need to ask. He will not take me."
Eivind thought for a moment.
"What about Margaret?" he ventured. "Couldn't she speak to him on your behalf?"
"I've not yet fallen so low that I need some woman to plead my case," Somerled snapped. "Besides, it's pointless. Ulf makes it clear I am to remain behind. The ties of kinship are nothing to him."
He was scratching on the tree trunk with his knife blade again. The image of a small ship appeared below the runes, a striped sail bellying in the wind, oars moving as one. Eivind watched and said nothing. In the morning they left Hammersby and rowed back to court. Eirik was not his cheerful self, and Eivind asked his brother what ailed him.
"I may as well tell you, I suppose," Eirik said as their horses moved along a broad track under pines. "I hope to persuade Oksana to come with me to the islands and to stay, her and the children."
"Persuade her?" echoed Summerled. "And why didn't you just tell her? She's a thrall, isn't she?"
Eric's mouth tightened.
"Such words reflect a narrow vision," he said. "A man or woman becomes a thrall simply by being in the wrong place at the wrong time. A moment of bad luck, that's all it takes. Back home in Novgorod, Oksana is a nobleman's daughter. She has my offer of marriage these 4 years past."
Eivind stared at him.
"Marriage?" he queried.
"Then why? Oksana's a proud woman. She's determined to do this her way or not at all. First she'll earn her freedom with her own work, no concessions. She's made that clear both to mother and to me. Only then will she agree to marriage. After that, she says, if I want to take her off voyaging, it's up to me. The fact is she likes it on the farm, and mother would miss her now. She's more like a daughter than a slave. There it is."
"So she won't wed you?" Summerled mused aloud. "That hardly matters, surely. She seems ready enough to welcome you into her bed, judging by that mob of small warriors that ran out to greet you. Why tie yourself down when you can have what you want with no obligations whatever?"
Eirik set his jaw, hunched his shoulders under the wolfskin, and rode on.
"I'm coming to understand why Ulf can't stand the sight of you," he said.
Eivind changed the subject quickly.
"The Jarl won't be well pleased to see so many of his warriors go, perhaps for good," he observed. "They say Thord won't be coming back. Even Grimm's talking about staying on over there, and there's Håkon. But that's different."
Eirik did not reply. It was common knowledge that Håkon's hearing was not what it had been, not since the stunning blow to the head he had suffered in that encounter with the men of Jutland more than 3 years ago. He still fought well. He played his part in every encounter, steadfast in his obedience to Thor. Nobody, not even Jarl Magnus, knew the extent to which the others covered for him, as his ears gradually lost their acuity, and his confidence began to wane. All of them were glad Ulf's venture had offered Håkon a chance to leave with dignity. Perhaps Thor himself had made this possible, as a reward for faithful service.
"A comfortable young wife, a farm, a squalling infant or two," mused Eirik. "It's not such a bad prospect."
"To me it sounds like a living death," someone had observed.
"Tedium incarnate. What sort of man chooses to waste his life so?"
Eirik glanced at him.
"Håkon is a stalwart warrior," he said grimly, "and a true friend. His choice has not been an easy one, but he's taking a wise course. Don't underestimate those of us you think simple, Summerled. Someday that could get you into trouble."
Summerled narrowed his eyes at him, but said nothing. Perhaps even he understood that it was not a good idea to pick a fight with wolfskins. The supplies came and were loaded into the knarr. The stock arrived, a ram and 2 ewes, a coop of chickens, another of geese, which kept up a continuous honking chorus and deprived all of sleep. There was also a fine young bull, long-horned, chestnut-coated, and a pair of dreamy-eyed heifers. These would not load until the day of sailing. Men came back from farms with their wives and children and their selected thralls. The settlement was full to bursting. All in all, it was a fine company. The day came when the last bright shield was hung on the golden dragon's side, and they launched her into Freyjafjord for her first real trial. Her oars sang through the water, She moved before the wind, swift and graceful as a giant seabird in flight. Ulf pronounced himself well pleased, and failed utterly to keep a grin of satisfaction from his usually sober features. Then Jarl Magnus held a feast to acknowledge the work that had been done, and to wish his kinsmen well. In the afternoon there were games, horse fighting, wrestling, running races, and even a bout of battlefield, in which Eivind led one team and Eirik the other. It was difficult to play properly when one had to avoid causing the opposition serious injury. Several men from each side were to join the expedition, after all, and they could hardly do so with a split skull, a broken jaw, or a shattered ankle. By dint of some quick pre-match negotiation, Eirik and Eivind guided their teams through a bout which was more spectacular than bloody. They made sure there were plenty of close calls, since the crowd must be entertained. There was a great deal of leaping and dodging, a somersault or two, and lethal blows calculated to miss by a hair's breadth. Women screamed, children squealed, men yelled help and instructions. Eivind's team was pronounced by the crowd to have won. Wiping the sweat from his face, he glimpsed Signa there, clapping and cheering with the rest, and gave a little bow in her direction. By the time he had straightened up, she was gone from sight. Before the sun set, Jarl Magnus's priest performed the ritual for the fleet's safety. By the water, where the Knarr lay at anchor and the great longship was drawn up on the shore, a white ox was slaughtered. The blood filled many bowls. The priest was an old man and moved stiffly in his long woolen robe, but his hands were supple enough, dipping the blood twigs, sprinkling the libation from bow to stern, from keel to rim rail of each proud vessel. Herbs were burned, and a wreath of oak leaves placed around the neck of the great creature that adorned the golden dragon's prow. Eivind felt a thrill of excitement as the priest gazed up into the darkening sky. The old man's eyes were filmy with age, and yet he seemed to see a great distance.
"Mighty Thor! Storm God, Battle God, Sky God, we greet you! Let fair weather and calm seas welcome these voyagers. May a sweet wind breathe them safely across the ocean. Thor, strongest of fishermen, let no sea monster threaten our vessels, our folk, or our possessions. We ask your blessing, Slayer of Serpents."
There was no answering roar of thunder, no spike of lightning split the sky. There was only the gentle wash of water on the pebbles, and the plaintive bellowing of the cattle, which were tethered not far away, awaiting loading into the Knarr. Still, the priest appeared satisfied. He reached out a gnarled hand and ran his fingers along the strakes of the new ship's side, pausing as he touched the point where the keel swept upward toward the prow. Here, runes were carved, a band of them swirling snake-wise up the fine oak, and between them were tiny images of men and gods and creatures.
"She goes with Thor's blessing, and Odin's and Freya's," the old man said. "For she goes to a fair land, over sea, and the men who travel in her must perforce be sailors and warriors and farmers too. May Thor carry you safe through the perils of the deep. Odin smite your enemies and give your leaders wisdom. Freya smile on your crops and cattle and grant you times of plenty. Fair Freya, his sister, grant your women peaceful hearths and healthy children. Go forth with courage into your new world."
With that, the fleet was ready. Cattle and sheep, chickens and ducks, men, women and children would board in the morning. And by the time the sun was high in the sky, the vessels would be slipping out between the small islands that formed the Skerry Guard, and into open sea. A great crowd of folk had watched the ritual. Margaret stood by Ulf's side, the picture of a good wife, her dark eyes watchful. She spoke to her husband once or twice, and he bent his head courteously to listen. And Eivind saw that fellow again, the one they called Firehead, standing among the crew of the Knarr. They were a rough-looking group of men, but folk said they were the best, tried and tested in all conditions. He was sure it was Sigurd. Now the fellow was looking across at Somaled, who stood tight-lipped and pale at the back of the Jarl's household. There was an expression on Firehead's face that Eivind fancied he'd seen before, in the hills above his mother's longhouse, when Sigurd had chopped wood as if meting out deadly punishment. Somaled glanced across, and suddenly Firehead was talking to one of the other crewmen and not looking their way at all. The smallest trace of a smile flickered across Somaled's face and was gone. That night the feasting was long and hearty, and Jarl Magnus was generous with his praises and his gifts. Reluctantly, he granted Håkon formal release from his service. He gave his warrior a fine cloak of beaver pelt, and a sword whose blade flickered in the light with a pattern like sun on a fair waterfall. There were others who intended to stay on in the Light Isles, and all received such gifts. Robes, cloaks, daggers, or axes. He gave Ulf a pair of great hunting dogs. Behind the Jarl's back, the Knarr's crew exchanged glances and grimaces. More livestock to carry. Thord, who had served 5 years as a wolfskin and wore a great seam across his face to prove it, was presented with a comely, dark-skinned slave girl with long hair to her waist and midnight black eyes. Thord could not keep the grin from his scarred features, and the girl did not appear at all put out by the prospect of a long ocean voyage, or the company of a man with so many teeth missing. It is in such ventures to new lands that slaves become wives, that serfs become free men and women. Perhaps she sensed that, for her dark eyes snapped with excitement as she made her way to the wolfskin's side. It was well known that Thord intended to size the new place up and stay on if it took his fancy. Margaret received a length of best linen, a double string of amber beads, and a set of game pieces cunningly carved in whalebone, with a silver inlaid board. She smiled politely, inclined her head respectfully, and thanked the Jarl in economical words. Eivind could see the small frown on her brow. He watched as her eyes flickered across to Somaled, who sat silent in his usual place, shadowed by a pillar. Then she sat down again by her husband, her hands in her lap.
"Now," said Magnus expansively, "I have been well entertained today, with excellent sport, and I have had cause yet again to observe how my youngest wolfskin acquits himself as strongly and ably in the arena of games as on the field of war. I made the lad a promise some time since, and I intend to honor it today. Come forward, Eivind. Let's see you."
Eivind remembered now something about a reward, and he'd been supposed to think about what he wanted, but it had entirely slipped his mind, what with one thing and another. He'd have to come up with something quickly, or the Jarl would be offended. He got up and walked forward to stand before Magnus, wishing he did not always feel so awkward on such occasions, as if the fine folk of the court were judging him in some way. He might be able to charge into an attack and kill many men. He might be able to win games of battlefield, and hunt stag and boar and wolf. But he had never mastered the art of finding ready words at times like this.
"My lord." "Well, Eivind, you've acquitted yourself splendidly today, as indeed has your brother. I have a gift for you, a reward for this afternoon's victory."
"Thank you, my lord."
Eivind was much relieved. It seemed the gift was already chosen, and all he had to do was accept politely, then sit down again.
"Wear this in your next battle," Magnus was saying,
and his senior housecarl brought out a wondrously wrought helmet, its broad headband decorated with figures of horses and warriors, its triangular panels rising to a short spike on the top. Eivind could imagine already how he might use that in close combat. The eye guards were well-shaped and strong. Most remarkable of all, from the headband, a fine curtain of woven links, fashioned from beaten metal, hung down to shield face, ears, and neck. This was a helm of superior make even to the Jarl's own.
"You are a wolfskin," Magnus said with a smile.
And a wolfskin needs no armor. He goes into battle clothed in the breath of the gods and shielded by their hands. Still, I want you to wear this. Your kind are not entirely immune to injury, and you in particular are overfond of risk. Let this gift grant us a few more seasons of your company, young Avent.
Thank you, my lord. It is indeed a generous gift.
Good, it was over. He need say no more, but could return to his seat by Eric.
Not so fast, my friend.
Avent halted.
The helm is your reward for today's sport. But we have a little unfinished business, I think. Have you forgotten the battle we fought, and the courage you showed against the plotters whom we overthrew east of Freyr's Fjord? I promised you a reward then, and you shall have one.
My lord, there's no need—
Ah! Don't tell me the helmet is sufficient, lad. I won't have it. Let not the tale be spread abroad that Magnus fails to give due recompense for loyalty, nor does not keep his promises. I said then you could name your own reward. You must do so now.
To his annoyance, Avent felt himself blushing. He could see Eric grinning at his discomfort, and Margaret looking at him very intently indeed, as if trying to convey some message. Somewhere behind him in the shadows sat Somerled. Somerled who, it seemed, had been cast out by his family not once, but twice, who had no home to return to, no brother to drink with, no woman to welcome him with her arms and listen to his secrets. And now the words he needed came to Avent with no difficulty at all.
My lord Jarl, I have considered this as you bade me. You are the most generous of leaders, and I hope you will not think my request odd or inappropriate. I know you may expect me to ask for a horse, or a weapon, or a fine cloak of fur, perhaps even for a handsome slave woman, such as the one who has put such a twinkle in my friend Thord's eye.
This was greeted with general laughter.
But?
Magnus asked, his eyes thoughtful.
My lord, I wish to request something not for myself, but for my friend, Somerled, your young kinsman.
Magnus's expression did not change, but Avent saw Ulf stiffen, as if he knew what was coming, and Margaret's eyes narrowed.
My lord, Avent continued, Somerled is a proud man, and will not ask this for himself. He has always vowed to make his own way, without patronage or favour, and indeed, he is a clever fellow who will do so, whatever your answer. But Somerled wishes for nothing more than a place on board the longship his brother has built, and a chance to accompany this expedition to new shores. In these isles of the West, such a promising scholar will find much work to exercise his talents, and is sure to make his mark. He will bring nothing but honour to his patron in Rogaland. I would ask that you influence your kinsman, Ulf, to include his brother among the folk who depart on this voyage. I'm certain Ulf will not have cause to regret such a decision, for Somerled has much to offer.
There was a little silence. The Jarl did not seem taken aback. He studied Avon's face as if to read his intentions, and was apparently satisfied.
Well spoken, young wolfskin, he said at last. You have a generous spirit. A man should be grateful indeed for such a loyal friend. And I must grant this request, for I have already given my word. What do you say, kinsman Ulf?
Ulf had gone extremely pale. One did not refuse to do the Jarl's bidding, especially when one's expedition was largely dependent on his patronage.
I will do as your lordship pleases, of course, he said,
his expression belying the polite words, for he had the look of a man facing the point of his enemy's sword.
This comes as a surprise to me. I had no inkling of my brother's wishes, or that he believed he might have anything of value to contribute to such a venture.
Any new settlement needs men of learning.
There was a note of mild reproof in Magnus's tone.
Go on. Take the boy with you. It could be the making of him.
Ulf gave a tight nod. Margaret's lips curved in a tiny smile. Eivind bowed to the Jarl and returned to his place by his brother.
What did you do that for, you fool?
Eirik hissed the moment he sat down.
What do you mean?
Eivind whispered.
You know Ulf doesn't want him there. The boy's a millstone around his neck.
Eirik wasn't joking. His expression was grim.
All he needs is a chance, Eivind hissed back. To know someone cares about him if...
He fell silent as the Jarl began to speak again.
Stand up, young Sommerled,
Magnus commanded. And by the pillar, Sommerled rose to his feet, silent.
Your friend is generous, and so am I in granting him this selfless gift, instead of the riches I wish to lavish on him for his many acts of courage. You'll wish to thank him, no doubt. And yourself, my lord,
Sommerled said smoothly. If he felt any pleasure or surprise at what had just happened, he hid it expertly.
I am aware that my future is dependent on your lordship's generosity, and I am grateful for that, though Eivind is right. If men remember me, I hope it will be as one who succeeded in his own talents, and did not ride to victory on the shoulders of others. I can assure you that I will not waste the opportunity you have given me today. I will use it to the full extent of my ability, and I wish to thank my friend and kind. Eivind does not accept gifts readily, your lordship is already aware of that. He's a modest fellow, more ready to see his own shortcomings in matters of intellect than he is to value his strengths in other spheres. My lord, let us reward Eivind in a manner fitting his own generosity of character. Allow him to come with us. Oh, not for good,
he hastened to add, as Magnus's brows drew together in an ominous frown, and Eivind choked back a shocked protest.
Not for good, for I know this youngest wolfskin is dear to you, and a vital part of your strike force. Release him for a season only. He has proved a loyal warrior to you, and a faithful friend to me. He has not asked for any special favors or particular recognition. Set him free from your service for a little, and let him go forth with this venture, boldly across the sea, and support the men of Rogaland against whatever enemies they may encounter. Before the storms of summer's turning, he can return to your side. He will most certainly be back in time for your autumn Viking. And what a fine tale he will have to tell you.
Magnus made a rumbling sound which seemed to denote disapproval.
I don't know about this, he said. I don't owe you any favors, Sommerled. Besides, I'm losing half my wolfskins for the summer, and not all of them will be coming back, I suspect. Generous I may be, but I'm not a fool.
Indeed not, my lord, Sommerled agreed. Still, young men should be offered such experiences, I think. A little exposure to far places and alien people can but strengthen their attachment to home, their loyalty to their own.
Eivind could not make himself speak. His heart still thumped with shock. He bit his lip, willing Jarl Magnus to say no. He had not the least wish to sail over the sea to some godforsaken island, nor to linger there, tilling fields and feeding chickens. He was a warrior. His job was here, fighting the Jarl's battles and keeping him safe. How would Thor find him so far away? And what on earth had got into Sommerled to ask such a thing? It was just as well Eivind was the Jarl's favorite, or he might end up not seeing Signa again for a whole summer.
My lord Jarl!
Eivind blinked. His brother Eirik had risen to his feet and was speaking now.
The suggestion is clearly not to your liking, and I understand the reasons for that. But it's a good notion. After the battle in the east, where my brother acquitted himself so well, your borders are very secure in that quarter. Your new alliance with Thorvald Strongarm here reinforces your support in the north.
It seems unlikely you'll face any real threat before summer's end. Enough of your wolfskins remain to guard you and deal with anything that might arise. Don't forget the 3 young men we've trained, who are all too eager to put their skills on display. The best of them will be chosen to take Hawkins' place, when we return. I think you could spare my brother until harvest month. The change will be good for him, and I'll undertake to look after him and bring him back safe. I've no intention of staying on in those parts myself.
Eivind glared at him, but Eirik would not meet his eye.
Hmm, said Magnus. We must let the young warrior choose for himself, I suppose. Let it not be said that I held him back. What do you say, Eivind?
One could not give a plain answer to this type of question.
My lord, you know I want nothing more than to serve you with axe and sword, and to follow the will of Thor. I will do whatever your lordship wishes.
This was as close as Eivind might come to saying he did not want to go.
Have you room for another on your longship, Ulf? Magnus asked with a smile.
Ulf was not smiling.
Eivind is a valiant warrior. Another like his brother, he said. Him I have no objection to, though he has surprised me today. Very well, Magnus said. There is nothing touches the heart so much as a fine display of loyalty between friends. These 2 young men have impressed me, so different in appearance and talents and in bearing, and yet so thoughtful for each other that they might almost be brothers. Both shall go. But Eivind, I need your promise that you will stay a season only. We'll have work here for you as soon as the nights begin to lengthen.
Yes, my lord.
Eivind's heart felt like lead. A whole summer with no raids, no battles. A whole summer with no Signa. A pox on Somerled, and a pox on Eirik. When had he ever said he wanted to go voyaging?
No settling down and setting up house with some buxom native girl now, the Jarl grinned. No, my lord.
The folk began to talk again, and Eivind spoke to his brother in a furious undertone.
Why did you say that? You must know I don't want to go. I don't know why Somerled asked. Everyone knows I want to stay here.
Eirik smiled without mirth.
Look at Ulf, he said flatly. There's your answer. You're the one who got Somerled invited on this, when his own brother was afraid to take him. If he's coming, you're coming. I've got a job for you, one you've done before.
What job?
Eivind watched Ulf. Perhaps that pinched look on his features really was fear, though he couldn't imagine why.
Keeping your friend out of trouble, said Eirik. Off you go, then. We'll sail at dawn. You better go and say goodbye to a certain lady. It's a long time till harvest.
The voyages were nothing new to Eivind. He was not troubled by the movement of the ship under his feet, or the way the sea somehow got into every corner, including boots and leggings, tunics and cloaks and hoods, so that being wet became constant. He was used to the way the skin chafed and itched, and the constant stink about the place. He did not mind having to row. The winds were fickle within the sheltered waters of Freyr's Fjord, and progress was slow under sail. What made this voyage different was what came next. Beyond the Skerrigard, one could no longer hug the coastline, putting in at night to camp on shore, make a fire, and sleep tolerably warm and dry in a tent. Instead, the ships were heading out into open ocean, toward a realm whose existence was more legend than known reality, more story than substance. Navigation must be guided by intuition, not visible markers. The very lives of the entire complement of passengers, crew, and staff were dependent on Ulf's ability to weigh unknown risks and find the right decisions. A storm, or contrary winds, or unexpected attack would soon set them off course. And if they missed their destination, who knew what lay between those regions and the very edge of the world? It came to Aethon that Ulf was indeed a man of great courage, and of vision, for he sailed forth with little more than a dream to guide him. Aethon admired that great